You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. We are glad you are joining us today. This show is dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology. Well, summer holidays have finally reached us and people are starting to spread out. Rush hour traffic is now a thing of the past, we hope, at least until September. And Art Factora is my producer. How are you doing, Art?
If it's summer holidays, what am I doing here?
Yeah, what are we all doing here? Did you have a great Canada Day weekend?
I did. Saw some fireworks, went for some pretty cool walks, and yeah, got out there, enjoyed some sunshine.
The Friday messes with me. I think that the Canada Day long weekend should have a Monday. I don't know why. It messed with me.
You know what? For Labor Day, I'm going to make the holiday on Monday for you.
Is it? Is it on Friday this year?
No, I'll make it on a Monday this year for you.
Well, that's good to know. We've got a good show lined up today. We're going to take a little bit of a look back. This is our 15th show, so we've already done a full season in TV terms of 13 shows. So I thought we should recap a couple of the stories that were most compelling through the year. We're gonna have a visit again from Lindsay Pinto. She's with Open Media. We certainly talked to her a few months ago about the whole issue of internet metering, with the ISPs wanting to charge us extra money for the amount of internet we use, and we'll get an update on that. Plus, they're really concerned now about the government spying on us online and enrolling the ISPs to basically gather data which the government has available at all times. Are you comfortable with that idea?
Well, as long as they don't put little cameras in my bathrooms, I'm okay with that.
You're okay with that. We're also going to get an update from Sabrina Firminger. You may recall she was on the show a few weeks ago talking about her self-publishing exploits. She's publishing a book herself, and she's reached another milestone in that. And we're also going to talk today to Todd Maffin. If you're a small business person or you're concerned about how the web works as far as business, got a great interview with Todd. We're going to talk about search engine optimization and basically how you make your website more popular and monetize it. It's a kind of a small business angle, but I think everybody should find that fairly interesting. Lots of stuff happening in the news. This week, Google started a limited trial of a new service called Google Plus, and it basically is Google's Facebook killer. I'm sure that they don't want to call it a Facebook killer, but I'm sure they're thinking in their minds, we're going to kill Facebook, which has taken on somebody pretty big.
Yeah, I was reading a blog this morning about Google Plus, and the writer was essentially telling us, at this point, Google Plus is kind of the Facebook for geeks.
Yeah.
And no worries, your mom's not going to be on this. So that was the title of the blog. It's like Facebook, but your mom ain't coming here, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that when we look at a place like Facebook, which started out fairly exclusive with just the university crowd and the young folk all on board, and then it grew into this social phenomenon that now has everybody on board. Where do you go to get away from mom and your aunt and all that sort of stuff? That is an issue. Now, just because it comes from Google is why it's catching our attention, but they've done some interesting things. They're basically using some different kind of micro apps within it to differentiate from what Facebook is. And whereas you consider Facebook as just this huge mashup of all of your friends, with Google Plus, what they're doing is they're allowing you to create things called circles. Mm-hmm. And you have these circles graphically on your screen, and you say work friends, you know, soccer team, you know, high school buddies. And then you grab people and you drag them into these circles so you can just communicate with that circle of friends and not with the friends at large. And that is a fairly elegant way of doing it. Now, you can do that by having custom profiles within Facebook, but it's not the most intuitive process. And so most people just have a limited profile where people don't have access to all of their information, and then they have kind of an open profile that everybody can see everything going on.
I think people will be glad about that, especially it should reduce, at least for a lot of people, the amount of bulk spamming of, I have a lot of friends, obviously other comics and other mm-hmm. people who are in the performance industry. So to see them talk about and post the pictures or the online posters of the shows they're going to be doing tomorrow night and Thursday night and just all of these things, it'd be nice that they would just put in the people that want to know about where the next show is,
uh-huh.
and then you're not clogging up news feeds.
Well, that's the whole idea. It's far more exclusive. So we'll see if it's successful. And don't forget, as Google steps ahead with this, and if they have something that's successful, we think, oh, is Circles going to win over how Facebook does it? Facebook has the ability to modify as well. So now we're going to see some heavy-duty competition moving ahead. The other interesting factor that I saw in it was they have something called Google Huddle, which is instant messaging to groups at the same time. So if you have four or five friends that you're all trying to organize for a party, you can set up a little group that you can SMS to and you can send quick text messages to. So it's kind of a micro communication site along that line. So it's going to be fascinating to see how Google Plus plays out. We have a new sponsor on the show.
What?
We haven't ever announced a new sponsor. We have a new sponsor.
That's cool because I have room in my wallet for more money.
Yeah, well, our new sponsor is an old friend of Dottotech. He's done all of my mortgages for as long as I can remember. Bill Macklem Mortgages is our sponsor. Now, if you haven't ever looked at having a mortgage broker, if you're considering your first mortgage or you are renewing your mortgage or you don't even know where you stand with your mortgage, one route is to go to your bank where they will sell you exactly what they want to sell you. The other route is to engage a mortgage broker, which is just smart because they speak to all of the different banks. They know exactly what's happening with the rates and what's with the options, and they are the bank's customers, so they can leverage the best rates for you. They work for you, representing you to the banks. And Bill Macklem is outstanding. If you don't know what your mortgage rate is, if you're paying too much, if you want to know what your options are, drop in at billmacklem.ca. It is well worth your time. I'd like to welcome back to the show Todd Maffin. Todd, of course, is an expert of all things social media. And today I want to talk about website stuff. I have been struggling building my new website for this radio property and learning as I go. Because when I did TV, I had 20 million viewers a year. I didn't have to worry too much about reaching people. Mm-hmm. We reached people. Now we're on radio and we're on the internet. And now we have to work hard to reach people. And so I'm learning all about search engine optimization and all those sorts of things. So the main reason that I invited you in here was to get free advice, Todd.
Absolutely. Yep, no problem. Aren't you feeding me after this?
I will feed you. All right. I will feed you after this. So let's talk about the science of traffic.
Science of web traffic.
Web traffic.
Yeah.
As opposed to...
Well, it's an art and a science, you know. I mean, it's... So let's say that you've got a web page, either it's for your company or it's just a personal blog you have or, you know, something like that. Every single person I deal with in my company will come up and they'll say, I want to be number one on Google. You know, like when people type in widgets, I want to be number one widget position. And it's like, you know, all the money in the world can't get you that unless you do some really specific things. First of all, get out of widgets because everyone's in them, right? Mm. I mean, if you have a lot, if you're in an industry or you're writing a food blog, for instance, which is there's tons of food blogs in Vancouver, especially, right? You're not going to be number one unless you're really doing things special. The trick to this is a bit of a science, as you mentioned, a bit of an art called SEO.
Search engine optimization.
You got it. And there are people, and this is their job, right? This is what they do for a living. They are experts in SEO. And what it is it's essentially tweaking your content, changing it subtly in a manner that makes it friendlier for Google and the other search engines.
And this has its roots back in the very beginning of the web when people would be putting tags in behind that you couldn't even see on the screen, and we'd be embedding tags so that people would find your website. And
that's right.
And it's grown because Google has tried to stay ahead of the curve. Google doesn't want you to be found. Google has one aspires to do one thing, to be relevant. Mm-hmm. They want, when you type in a search, they want you to find what you're looking for. So they actually have a fairly pure motive. They have a whole other revenue motive attached to it, which you can actually pay to be found, which is a totally different story. But in pure search,
yes,
they want you to find what you're looking for. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they've done a very good job because they changed the model that you're talking about. The previous model, as you alluded to, was what we nerds would refer to as keyword stuffing. Mm-hmm. And the way it worked was, let's say you have a web page article. Let's say you've got a blog post, right? And it's an article you want people to find, and it's an article about, I don't know, widgets. I hate widgets.
Let's say it's about birds.
Birds. All right. So let's say that you want to be the Vancouver resource for birds, right? You want to be that page. So back in the day, what we would do is we would figure out the words that people were using to search for those.
Feathers, beak.
Absolutely.
Flying.
Bird, bush tit, whatever, robins and everything like that. Egg. And we would repeat those words over and over and over and over and over and over again. And if the web page were a white background, we'd put it in white text so that you, as an actual human being looking at the page, wouldn't notice it. But the search engines weren't smart enough back then to know that there was a difference in color. It would just read it and it would go, oh, well, there's a whole lot of words with the word bird here. It must be about birds. Google changed that because they came along and they realized everyone was doing that. Everyone was stuffing the pages. It wasn't relevant, right? And so and when you would type in bird blog Vancouver, what you would get was the person who said bird the most on the page. Not relevant.
And we actually, if I can interject momentarily, porn purveyors were just stuffing it so that every site that you went to was ended up being a porn site because they were the ones making money.
And you know, it's funny because porn on the internet is still remains the porn industry on the internet was responsible for video streaming for the codecs we have. Like, I mean, it really they really did push the envelope. So here's what
Thank
Google
goodness
did
for it.
Exactly. So here's what Google did that was different is Google said, in addition to looking at the content on the page, we're going to look to see who else considers that page important. So now if you've got a page called Vancouver Bird Blog, but no one's linking to it, right? No one's paying any attention to it. There aren't any bird websites that are pointing to your site. There's no bird forum where someone said, hey, this is a really good blog. If no one's pointing to your site with a link, Google says,
you're not relevant.
It's probably not relevant. No one's paying any attention to this. Now, on the other side, let's say that you've got this bird blog, you've posted an article, and someone at CBC says, we're doing this story on it, we'll link to your article from our producer's page. And let's say a couple of other bloggers in the animal world, animal bloggers, say, you know, there's this really good blog. The more links that are inbound, the more websites that point to you, the higher you move up in Google. And more than that, the more important that website is that links to you, the higher up you go. Google refers to, well, Google doesn't, they have this as a particular score. It's called a Google score. We nerds call it Google juice. You have better Google juice. So .otech, if it's, you know, it's probably got very strong because you've got lots of links in. If all of a sudden the New York Times, CNN.com, and CBC were to link to a page, you would move up in Google.
Yes.
That's how it works.
And that's it, and that's the goal that everybody has. So how do you, is it just elbow grease that companies can, like, it's one thing if you're writing a food blog and it's a hobby. It's a whole other thing if you're trying to drive traffic and you're trying to, because ultimately the power of this is to get people to your site so that you can then monetize it either by reaching your message out or by selling product or by selling advertising. There's some reward at the end.
Yes.
So if you are serious about it, if you're just blogging about model cars and you've got a series of people, you know, it's one thing. But if you really want to get out there, what's the best
strategy? There are steps you can take, yes. So here's a couple of things. First of all, publish frequently. The more often you publish, the more Google will go back. So if you're just publishing once a week or so, eventually Google and all these other engines will figure out, well, they're only doing it once a week or so. We'll only go by once a week and check. If you're doing it every other day or so, it's more frequent.
Now, that's talking about fresh content on your site.
That's right.
And a lot of sites now we're referring to not as websites, but we're saying that they are really a blogging site. And the blogging site really refers to the constant stream of updates on the site.
Yes. It's worth having, you know, if right now you update a web page manually, it's worth considering moving to a blog platform. That doesn't mean it has to look like a blog where people are posting photos of their meals, right? Mm-hmm. You can just use, there's great software called WordPress, which is free. WordPress.com will handle it. So once, because search engines are used to those structures of those web pages, they index better, right? They figure out where things are on the page. If you use WordPress self-downloaded version, this is their own version you can install on your own server, you can actually buy these upgrades, essentially, to this WordPress blog platform. They're called themes. Theme is just the way a page looks, right? Mm-hmm. So all the content stays the same, but you can apply a different theme. So one day you can make your theme blue. Another day you can make it so that the same content is in two columns instead of one. It's not related to the content, but how it's laid out on the page. So you can pay for these premium themes. And there are some themes that are designed for search engines. Thesis is one of them. Headspace is another name. So those words are really good. You purchase one of these themes and you will be higher up in Google's ranking simply because of the way that theme is designed.
Really?
Yeah. So that's another tool. If you don't want to do that, if you happen to use WordPress, and I go back to WordPress because a lot of people do use it, you can also install these little plugins. Mm-hmm. One is called Yoast. It's called it's called WordPress SEO. By Yoast, Y-O-A-S-T.
They do it for other platforms as well. I believe we have that on. We use Drupal, and we have a plugin that does.
Yes, exactly. And what's really cool about it is you write your post in this platform, and just before you publish, it's a little area for SEO, for search engine optimization, mm-hmm. and you fill it out a little bit, and it says, okay, well, what words do you really want to be ranked on for this? Like when people search, you say Vancouver birds, I really want. So it goes through your article and it says, okay, well, look, Vancouver birds is in your title, but you only put Vancouver birds in two places. So why don't you bump it up in a little bit? And by the way, instead of calling that page title, the actual file name, post12, why don't you call it vancouverbirds.htm? You know, if you include the title of the keywords that you're looking for or that you want people to search for in the title and in the name of the actual file, okay. Little things like that.
Well, actually, that's a little bit different than the tools that I have. So I'm going to take a look for that. But there's also the concept of attaching tagging your post as well by putting in meta tag information that helps the search engines as well.
Yep.
Is that losing its value?
A little bit, yeah. There used to be this, and there still is, an area called meta descriptions or meta keywords. Yeah. Not many engines pay too much attention to that
really?
Anymore.
So I'm starting to waste my time by doing that. So now you have to pack the words back into the article itself. And we've come full circle.
We have, and you can't go too far, right? And unfortunately, Google will not publish its secret sauce. Yeah. So my experience has been, if you're looking for, let's say this bird example again, sorry to keep pounding against the horrible same example, but you know, if the article is about, I don't know, 600 words or so, you can probably get away with 4, maybe 5 references to the keyword you're looking for mm-hmm. Or that you want people to search for in the body. Absolutely make sure it's in the title of the article, like the headline of the article. That's really important as well. And then the second step, as we talked about earlier, go find other websites that have high Google juice. Google's term is PageRank, is what mm-hmm. they call it.
Yeah.
So go find sites that have high PageRanks. And they're the ones off the top of your head, you know, like bird forums and things like that.
And look for the ones in your area of expertise and see what they're doing.
Yes, and make sure, and here's what's critical, make sure that you provide a link with the keywords linked that you want. So if you want to move higher, you can't just say, I want to be higher in Google. You have to say, well, what keywords do I want to be higher with? So if Vancouver birds is what you're after, make sure you go onto all these forums, you know, and when you post something, say, I've got a great blog and it's about, ding, Vancouver birds, and you make that the link. That way, Google sees those words physically attached to the address of your page. That is an inbound link. That will work.
So what you're saying is you actually go out and pimp your product on your competitors' websites.
Sometimes competitors, although if they're good, they'll knock you off. sometimes forums, but you know, I never recommend to clients that you just go on drive-by spam. You know, you don't want to just hit a bird forum and say, "Hey, come visit my site." Blah blah blah. No,
okay.
Join the forum, engage in dialogue, and then when it's appropriate, if they're talking about bush tits, for instance, you can say, "Actually, I've got a really interesting article." Then provide a link. Then it's relevant, right? You're part of the conversation. You're not just drive-by. But you're right. There are places. You know, there's websites out there like Fiverr, Fiverr.com, where you can pay someone $5 to go get you 50 backlinks, and they'll go post for $5. They will go post whatever article you want with whatever keyword you want on 50 other websites. Now, they're low page rank sites usually,
yeah,
and sometimes they're not great.
You get those people on your site because I just go through and clear that stuff out. It occasionally gets posted.
That's drive by spam. Yeah, yeah. I clear that stuff out quite a bit.
Yeah, I'd sure like to find a tool that did that automatically. We could talk on and on, and we will in future. Todd Maffin Unplugged.
Do I get a theme song?
We'll talk to Chris about it. We got our music guy, Chris King. He'll help us out. He'll do a Todd Maffin thing. And do you want it to be a bird theme?
I don't care, as long as it's showgirls.
Bird theme or widgets?
Showgirls.
Showgirls.
Dancing showgirls, man.
ToddMaffin.com. Check them out.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. MacTech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Chris Miller from MacStation joins me. And Chris Miller, the one thing I hear people say more about Macintoshes is, you got to get a Mac because you don't need antivirus.
It's true.
Is it still true?
It's more or less true. Now, I've always said, whenever somebody came in to me and said, hey, I heard Macs don't get viruses, I say, it's not that Macs don't get viruses, it's that they're a lot less likely to get viruses.
It's like my daughter. She never gets a cold. Then she got a cold. She was shocked.
It's true. It just comes out of nowhere. And it's not even as much viruses as much malware, which is bits of software intentionally placed on the machine to turn it into a botnet, turn it into a spyware, to collect passwords, things like that. Not viral, Just software meant to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
That's much more common on Macs than viruses. For instance, the one that just came out, very cleverly named Mac Defender, which tricked a whole lot of people into – it would send this little pop-up message when you went to a certain website, and it would say, this is a security update. Please download. And tons of people just seeing Mac Defender hit OK, downloaded it right on their machine. It actually happened so often for the first time, Mac actually put out a self-deployed malware detector to defend against this one problem just because it was so insidious.
And what did it do?
It just collected basic information and minor bot networking.
Mm-hmm.
So not terrible, just really irritating.
So there isn't the ongoing huge volume of spyware and malware and viruses that we find in the Windows world, but it is relevant. So what should a Mac user be doing? Are we at the point where Mac users have to install antivirus?
Well, it's not something to panic about. It's not something to bolt the doors, pull your Ethernet cables out, and hide in the room sleeping. But a little bit of free antivirus software never really hurt. Mm-hmm. I still wouldn't go out and buy $200-$300 for the big McAfee, the big Norton. Those are certainly good ideas and also very effective, especially if you're in an enterprise setting. But for an average home user, you can get one of the free antivirus softwares. I use Sophos myself, which is actually a local company. Good little antiviral software.
How do you spell that? Sophos.
Sophos is spelled Sophos.
That would have been my guess. Sophos.com. So that's good Mac free antivirus software.
I use it myself.
Mm. And mainly is email the email has been replaced now by browsing the websites in as far as being the entry system for most bad stuff on a computer.
Yeah, most of your garbage doesn't come from the email anymore. It just there's so many easy blocks that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good tip if you're ever on a web page and the web page tells you that you have a virus or infected or need something, it is lying.
Oh,
there is
yeah.
no way that a web page can detect anything on your machine beyond what browser you're using.
There we go. So Mac antivirus, still not an absolute essential, but becoming a good idea.
Yeah.
There we go. Chris Miller from Mac Station. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mac Tech is brought to you by Mac Station, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. Mac Station, who said business and pleasure don't mix?
A few months ago, we had Lindsay Pinto on the show. She's with openmedia.ca, and she joins us again. Hi, Lindsay. How are you doing?
Hi, Steve. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Now, in our initial conversation, it was all about metering the internet. Those greedy, greedy ISPs were going to charge us per byte. And you folks had basically led the charge for Canadians to say, we don't want to pay by the byte. We want open access to the internet. And it was, where do we stand on that now?
Well, we're about to go into a CRTC, our communications regulator. They're about to have a hearing on the issue that's starting July 11th. It's a public hearing. It's going to go on for about a week, and we're going to be appearing there and making the case that Canadians want a more open and affordable internet, bringing Canadians' voices to the table, and making sure and trying to get the CRTC to become a more citizen-centric organization, so not always just favoring the big telecom companies.
Now, since we had the conversation, several of the major ISPs have announced that they are going to indeed start to engage with some form of cost per byte, in that they don't seem to be listening at this point.
No, they do not. There are examples of ISPs who have considered public pressure and have made moves for public relations purposes, like Shaw, who are offering unlimited plans. But I mean, the issue still remains a regulatory one. So we need to make sure that there is that competitive check on the market that ISPs are free to offer unlimited packages should they so desire in order to compete with those that cap the internet so that we have a check on pricing so that citizens get the most affordable internet possible.
And so those hearings start very soon with the CRTC. How long till you think that there's actually any policy that comes down?
The CRTC has said that they would make a decision within 4 months of the hearing, so that puts us in November.
Okay, so November will be the next checkpoint for that. Now, you guys aren't just resting on your laurels of dealing with one issue. There's a myriad of issues that Canadians have to be concerned with as far as online. And now you've got splashed all over your website to stop online spying by Big Brother. Tell us about that.
Well, essentially, there are these bills called the Lawful Access Bills that are set to be passed as part of a larger crime bill in the fall. They essentially allow government to force internet service providers to collect information about internet users and mobile users without a warrant. And the cost of this will be phenomenal, as internet service providers have to install the surveillance equipment. And, you know, it's been decried by basically every privacy commissioner in the country. And there's nothing good about these bills. It's warrantless, it's invasive, it's costly, and frankly, they're poorly thought out.
So is the issue, I mean, I don't imagine that you folks have any issue with the ISPs having to provide information for criminals where there's a search warrant or where there's due process put in place. But this is basically creating some sort of a log that tracks all of our activities that the authorities don't need to give any reason that they want that information.
Exactly, and there's been no evidence that the current legal system falls short in providing authorities with the information they need to capture criminals.
So this could be used for everything from software piracy to people that are downloading music or people that are just engaged in pretty much any activity online that the government finds in the gray area. We could be at risk.
Pretty much, and they've given the permission for just a blanket description of authorities, in quotes, to access this information. So we're not even sure exactly who's going to have access to all of our personal information online. It's a huge invasion.
It sounds very Patriot Act-ish from the states, doesn't it?
It does. It's very reminiscent of that, and it's reminiscent of certain parts of the Patriot Act, which were even rejected in the states.
Mm-hmm. So that is what's on now, and so you are now collecting names on that petition online, am I correct?
That's true. It's at stopspying.ca.
And what will be the watershed moments in that? Is there anything going to happen in the next little while that our voice will be heard loud and clear on how we feel about this issue?
Well, it's going to be, we're going to go about it in a very similar way as we did Stop the Meter. We're going to be targeting key politicians, so Public Safety Minister Vic Taves and the Minister of Justice, Rob Nicholson, asking them to stop these bills from going into the omnibus crime bill and hopefully stop them altogether.
I think these are issues that all of us should be concerned with. Openmedia.ca is one place that we can go to educate ourselves a little bit more and add our voice if we are indeed concerned. Lindsay Pinto is with Openmedia.ca. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
This is the time in the show when we encourage you to come and visit us in person online at dottotech.com. We work so hard on making the website full of valuable content. Of course, you can listen to this show. If you don't happen to catch the whole show, you can listen to any segment from the show, and you can listen to previous shows. We're doing a bunch of recaps this week on the show, so if you want to listen to the original interviews with all of these guests, you can find all of those online. What's your favorite part of the website, Art?
Oh, the pictures of you, Steve.
There is a picture of me on the website. We don't have any pictures of Art.
That's true.
Can we get a picture of Art to put up on the website?
I will find a picture of a good-looking guy, and we can just say
put any guy
Art
up there.
Yes, I'll find it for you.
He looks awful lot like Brad Pitt, but it's actually Art Factora. Isn't that interesting? And we've got a great giveaway. One more week of our giveaway, and why don't you tell the folks what we're giving away, Art, because it's awesome.
Oh, I went to Chapters the other day, and I was looking at these. It's the new Kobo Wi-Fi Touch.
Yes, and some lucky person is going to win one. So you lusted after it?
I did. Well, and it reminded me of my my Galaxy Tab. So it's
nothing like your Galaxy Tab.
Well, it looks kind of the same size.
It's a device.
I know it's nothing like it. I just
does your cell phone remind you of your Galaxy Tab?
If it's a big cell phone.
If it was a big cell phone. I think that they should have the Galaxy. I think you should be able to use it as a cell phone. Just personally, I think it would be awesome. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that you can come to the site, register to win a Kobo Wi-Fi Touch. Dottotech.com for all of your Dottotech needs. Cedric Tetzel joins me. He's the computer head at London Drugs. Cedric, scanning has kind of gone from one spectrum to another over the last few years. Most people now have a scanner in their all-in-one device, but those scanners are sometimes a little bit underpowered depending on what you want to do. And there's still a market out there for dedicated scanners.
It's a very, very exciting market. We were at a point in time where the photographers have moved from film to digital. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I'm fine for you and me. We have a lot of digital files we can give to our family, to our kids, and so forth. But for our family's parents' generation, they've got all those pictures, slides, negative. Now what do you do with it? Mm-hmm. My kids are growing up. I like to share those files with them, what do I do? So dedicated scanners are actually the answer to that dilemma.
Now, you always had to give up something scanning in slides in the past. Either it was inconvenient where you had to load them into trays and then into the lid of the scanner, or you're paying the price for resolution because the scanners were designed to basically scan in at maybe 300 dots per inch, which was really too low a resolution for the slides. What are we looking at technically as far as A, ease of use, and B, resolution?
Well, starting from the very bottom end of the scale, for a basic scanner, which is basically, think of it as a webcam built into a box that you can put negatives and slides in, take a picture, and off it goes. They're not very good quality, but it will do, especially if your original negative or slide wasn't all that great quality in the first place.
Which a lot of them aren't.
Right.
So, but also, they're okay if you're, especially if you're doing things for like just for Facebook, if you're not going to be finally blowing up and printing them off. It's basically for sharing the files over the internet, the quality is going to be okay. And how much are those scanners?
They're under $100.
And what are some makes that people will look at?
Pacific Image has one and a few others too.
Okay, good. So now stepping up into the next level, are we looking at the Nikon level now of dedicated slide scanners?
Well, Nikon level probably is outside the price range of most average user.
Okay, so they're still the top end, are they?
They're
still
the very top end. They do negatives, they do slides, but unless you have a budget of about $2,800.
No.
Or else have a client that pays you that much.
That's too big a leap from the $100. What's the next step up then?
For about $100, you can get, just over $100, you can get a flatbed scanner that allows you to put slides and negatives in at the same time. Generally, what you do is when you grade up is you get high resolution. You start from about 4,800 dpi, moves up to 6,400 dpi. So dots per inch, the higher, the better, because it gives you better resolution. But the other thing to look out for is something called Dmax. That's the maximum density of a slide or a negative that you can scan into a file. The higher the number, which maximum you can get is 4.0. So if you look for the scanner specifications, if you get closer to 4.0, the better quality your scans is going to be.
And typically speaking, are these dedicated flatbed scanners with lights in the lid, which is how we create the backlighting that's required for scanning and transparencies?
Yep.
Okay. And you also benefit because these are the same high resolution also works if you have any prints to scan in, correct?
Exactly. More than that is that a lot of the better products, say between $200 to $600, many of them come with automatic dust and scratch removal.
Yes. I think Epson had a line called the Perfection, which I played with on the TV show a few years back, and I was very impressed with how good a job it did with basic repairing of photos.
And it's to the point where you can even have a damaged photograph and it automatically can stitch it back together and change if it's faded, old photographs faded, it'll correct the color for you and give you a perfect file.
Is that the top end of the price? Around $600 is for the average amateur. That's about the maximum that they're going to be spending and getting just a heck of a product for that?
The $600 is right up at the top end of the amateur's market.
So there's still a place for the dedicated scanner.
Absolutely. And my father-in-law bought one and he's been merrily scanning away his travel pictures and sharing with all his kids and grandkids, having a jolly good time.
There you go. Thank you very much, Cedric. Cedric Tetzel, who is the head of the computer department at London Drugs.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or a question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Paperback writer.
Continuing on with our theme of updating you on stories on Dottotech, a few weeks ago we had Sabrina Firminger on. She is a fledgling author who is self-publishing her first work. When Sabrina came on the show last time, she was talking about how she had made the decision to self-publish and the journey she was on, and she joins me now. How are you doing, Sabrina?
I'm great.
And you've hit a new milestone in the publishing process. Why don't you fill us in?
Yeah, so I've just finished up on the editing portion of the process, and I've moved
onto production and design.
So where, just to recap for people that don't know, you've decided that you're going to take a novel. You've got a fiction novel that you've written yourself, mm-hmm. and you, instead of going the traditional publishing route of trying to find publishers who will engage your property and then and work you through it, you've actually paid for a service online, and which includes full editing, feedback from an editor, and all the way through to the final published piece, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I'm using a company called iUniverse, mm-hmm. and it's largely a print-on-demand company, but some of my books, my hard copy books, will actually be in Chapters Indigo stores across the country. It'll also be available for sale on Kindle and Nook and all those various reading devices as well.
All of the different e-readers. So yeah. Now, so as you say, you've reached the point now where you're actually in production design. So you're deciding what is that designing a cover, deciding which font you're going to have, and what the actual formatted
right.
layout is.
So what I have done is I've supplied the company iUniverse. Mm-hmm. It's part of my package where I give them, or I don't have to give to them, they can create it themselves, but I've decided to give them original photography and marketing copy for the front and the back cover, and they're taking all of that now, and they're laying all that out. At the same time, they have taken my completed manuscript, and they're building the book proof from there.
Okay, so let's just fall back for a second. Now, one of the things that you mentioned is that they're writing all of the jacket, or you've written all of the jacket material. Your profession is a publicist, so you've got
yeah.
a skill set that others might not have in this area, so you knew exactly
yeah.
what you wanted to say in that area. But they do provide those services should you need them.
They do provide them, and if you don't like what they end up with, you don't have to use it, because
mm-hmm.
it is self-publishing. So, you know, I have supplied them with the copy that I'd like to use. They're doing something called a cover copy polish, mm-hmm. meaning that they're using their, you know, their skills and expertise to bring it up to industry standards. And then I'm going to have a look at that and decide if it's something that I want to use or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hopeful because, you know, I've looked at other books that they have that they've done this cover copy polish for, and I've liked what I've read.
Okay. Now, as far as the manuscript itself, what did you do? You just wrote it in, did you write it in Word, or what did you write it in?
I did it in Word. They prefer receiving a Word document,
mm-hmm.
definitely. They don't want PDFs or anything like that.
And did you have to do the pagination and all that stuff yourself, or did they provide all of that?
They're doing all of that.
Okay. So you just structured it into chapters, and that's the only formatting that you had to do.
Exactly.
Is it tough to decide what font it's going to be?
They're going to be the ones doing all the layout. I haven't actually seen the proofs yet to decide, you know, if I like the typeface and everything that they're using.
Mm-hmm.
But that will come when they send me the proofs, and then I can sign off on that. Actually, you know, I've also I hired my own proofreader and copy editor and line editor to do the editing as well. iUniverse, you know, offered to sell me these services,
mm-hmm.
And I decided not to end up using their services because it would have ended up being a couple thousand more dollars.
Yeah.
And I preferred to use my own editors that I could meet with in person. But once I get the proofs back, I will be able to, you know, look through and spot errors, and then they'll make the correction. This is where it becomes a bit of a cash grab, because I get a total of 50 corrections included in my package, and then it's an extra $100 for every other 25 corrections.
You buy packages of corrections. That's ridiculous. Sorry.
Well, I had to make sure that it's as error-free
yeah.
as possible as we enter this process. Oh, you know, I could see how a less secure, less prepared author, you know, would go into
yeah.
this thinking that they're going to spend a certain amount and then be talked into buying tens of thousands of dollars more services from them, you know. So I've been very clear with them and with myself about what it is that I'm going to use from them and what it is that I can source locally.
It sounds to me like what the attitude you've gone in with is taking responsibility yourself. And,
mm-hmm.
and having ownership over each and every phase. And I believe that that's probably necessary in order to make this in order to have a chance at success with this sort of a process.
Well, I'm very lucky because in my life I work with, you know, graphic designers, and I work with artists, and I also have a certain skill set with regards to marketing and publicity. Great thing about a company like iUniverse is that they do, if you don't have those skills and you don't have those local connections, they are there and they will sell you all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is very easy to get talked into adding on different things to your to your package. And I've just chosen for myself not to do that. I know what I'm good at. I know what I want from them. And it is self-publishing, and I'm definitely have a good sense of self in this process.
Sabrina Firminger, our fledgling author. We're so excited. And you've announced the title of the book now, too. What's it called?
It's called The Healer.
The Healer. Well, we will update with you in a couple more months.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Steve.
Thank you, Sabrina. For most of us, our single biggest expense every month is our home mortgage. But few of us know what our mortgage rate is, if we were to ask, and few of us know if we have actually the best mortgage possible. Well, I've got an expert that will help you discover that, Bill Macklem at Bill Macklem Mortgages. He's the one I trust for my mortgage. Mortgage brokers do this for you. They go and negotiate with all the banks. They find the best rate. They understand you as a client, and they want to sell you the best mortgage available from any lender. That is a huge benefit to you, saving you time and saving you money and allowing you to pay off your mortgage faster, which is something that we all should do. So I want you to drop in at my friend's site, billmacklem.ca. That's MACKLEM.ca. Check out Billy Mack, and you will probably save some money on your mortgage, and at least you'll be better educated to know if you have a good mortgage or not.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Many people's favorite moment in the show, the moment when Chris Miller and Steve Dotto face off about who has discovered the coolest app this week. Chris, what's your App of the Week?
My App of the Week is a game.
A game?
A game, sir.
Oh.
It's called Feel For It.
Feel For It.
It is the most simple game I've ever seen, and it is absolutely addicting and will turn even the stodgiest old duffer into a child with giddy exuberance.
Better than Angry Birds?
I don't know if Angry Birds is pretty huge. It's pretty awesome. Now, Feel For It, what it is in three-dimensional space, you're presented with three lines and then three other lines. And you move the phone in three dimensions around the room or around yourself in order to line these three series up. Now, I know it sounds like that really silly.
Ball thing where you roll the ball and drop it in the hole.
You mean golf?
Yeah, well, no, it's a little plastic thing with little pebbles in it, and you spin them around until they drop into a hole.
Yeah, but that's in two dimensions. This works in three dimensions, X, Y, and Z, sir. And I know it sounds simple, but I honestly, you give it a shot, you'll be doing it for a good 2-3 hours.
What do you think, Art? That's weak sauce.
I agree. Steve, please put him in his place.
I got no love, Art.
Shazam. Now, I know we know about Shazam. Shazam is the music app where you basically hear a tune you like and you start Shazam up and it tells you the tune. Not only does the new version of Shazam tell you the tune, now it scrolls the lyrics in time with the music on your iPad or iPhone. Art, who wins?
Steve! I'm a music guy, though.
Well, three-dimensional space versus lyrics.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation. Book a one-on-one training with our Apple specialists or sign up for one of our free workshops. Get the most out of your Mac with MacStation. FitTech is brought to you by Fit for Work, leaders in corporate health and wellness programs. Your fitness is our job.
PJ Wren slides in to do our FitTech feature from fitforwork.ca. How are you doing, PJ?
I am well. Things have changed.
We have a camera now. Yeah, we're on video now.
I had to put lip gloss on. I like the old days when I can come in my slippers.
Yeah. Speaking of slippers, speaking of what you're wearing.
Oh, how's that for a segue?
We did it.
Huh?
We did it.
Well done.
So you sent me an email saying we're going to do workout clothes.
Yeah.
I do normally just wear the oldest thing that fits loose, except I do have issues with sometimes my shorts riding up.
I imagine that is an issue, especially when working on the stability ball.
Yes.
Do your socks match?
Yeah, my socks match.
Well,
typically that's a step ahead. So, but there are issues around workout clothes being in the most, especially as summer approaches. You know, proper cooling and proper sun protection too. I imagine is an issue.
So you want obviously not to wear a cotton fabric that's just going to soak up the sweat and not cool you off. In fact, it's going to make you hotter.
Really?
So get a dry fit material. Each company has its own name, but any synthetic material is going to work. Dry fit is Nike's claim to fame.
Okay, and that's basically what we used to call, like when I fish, we have in
fish,
when I'm
that's not a sport. No,
it is
Sorry.
A sport. Yeah, no. When I'm gearing up to go into the bush or to go, especially in the cold weather,
yes.
they have what's called a wicking layer, which takes and pulls the sweat away from your body,
yes.
so that you don't get wet. And that's yes. basically what we're talking about.
That's exactly what we're talking about. And each company has its own name,
okay.
so don't get hung up on the name. So Adidas is called Play Dry. Lululemon's got its own name. So mm-hmm. just get a synthetic material that's going to wick away the sweat. And then make sure that your outfit matches whatever you're doing, in particular your shoes. That's probably your most important piece of equipment. So don't wear a cross trainer to play a tennis match because you need that lateral support. So go to a running shoe store, tell them what you're going to be doing.
And what about your socks while we're onto that?
Yeah.
Oh, you were going to talk about socks?
Yeah, socks are very important because I find that socks that are too thick kind of bunch down.
Yeah.
And if they're too thin, I find my runner slides around in them.
So yeah. And I used to wear, when I played basketball and squash, I always used to double sock for lateral movement, anything.
What did you feel? It protected the ankle more?
No, not the ankle. It's just blisters. And,
oh, okay,
and I always
yeah.
felt like my foot it would move on the, I guess it was two pairs of cotton socks and just the way that yeah. my foot moved in the shoe. And a lot of ball players used to do that all the time. Most of the guys on my basketball team, I think, used to always
yeah.
wear two.
Mech's got great selection of Mountain Equipment Co-op
yeah.
of socks. Same with dry fit underwear, too.
Oh.
Yeah, to prevent chafing.
Chafing, because that could be an issue.
A little uncomfortable.
For certain people, so, yes.
And then if you're working out outside, hat, sunscreen. People know these things. It's just sometimes they don't follow through. One tip, though, I do tell people that if you're overheating, mm-hmm. get a handkerchief and wet it down and wrap it around your neck. That's the quickest way to cool down your body temperature.
Is some moisture around the neck.
Yep.
Now, what about prices? I mean, you're talking about
yeah.
the different yep. manufacturers. Is it worth spending like
yes.
$60 on a t-shirt that you're going to work out in?
You can find them cheaper if
yeah.
you look around.
Okay.
But yeah, because you are paying a bit more for that synthetic fiber.
Okay.
So if you price point too is a concern, Costco actually carries some great dry fit materials.
You just have to look
yeah,
for
$15,
it. $20. Oh, okay.
I buy all my Nike t-shirts. They're all dry fit. I buy them all on sale.
Okay.
So the only time that I go in town a little bit is when I go to Lululemon.
Oh,
but
okay.
That's just a girl's
that's
choice.
That's all about styling. So
yeah.
So pay attention. No cotton.
No cotton.
Stay dry.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't look like you're working out as hard. It's
and they also claim, too, I read this study, where if you dress a little nicer, it encourages you to work out more.
Oh.
So maybe what we need to do is dress you up a little bit more and you'll work out more.
This wasn't about me.
It's always about
you.
It's
all about PJ. It's about PJ. Her website, fitforwork.ca. If your company is interested in getting fit, getting happier, and being more productive by having more days in the office, contact PJ. Thanks
You're
for
here.
Coming in.
Thanks, Steve.
Brought to you by Fit for Work, making sluggish workplaces into invigorated workplaces. Visit us online at www.fitforwork.ca.
Aylwin Hsu from Wireless Etc. joins us, and we're gonna spend some time talking about some of the different handsets that are out there, because there are so many out there to choose from. And often we just get focused on the RIM, the BlackBerry product, and the iPhone, and some of the odd time on some of the other platforms. But there really are still a bewildering number of handsets people can choose from.
Definitely. You know, what we've seen is this migration from voice phones to smartphones. But just like in the days of voice phones, there's a lot of different opportunities for people to try different devices that meet their needs.
And so there's a lot of manufacturers that are almost tier two manufacturers as far as the mindset goes, but they're still really experienced. Sony and Ericsson having worked together now to start to produce some handsets are a prime example.
Yeah, Sony Ericsson is a great example of that. And Sony Ericsson last year said that they look at the Android platform as the basis of all their smartphones going forward. They really want to produce the top-selling Android handsets in the world.
And so that's a big change for these guys, because they kind of always went their own way, especially Sony. They went their own way for so long. For them to jump on board the Android and drink and kind of accept Android as the one OS that they're going to work for, that was a big step, really.
Yeah, actually, last year they created a Symbian handset, which was another operating system.
Yeah.
But this year on their roadmap, everything that we've seen has just been fully focused on Android. And Android's, as we've discussed, is a very open platform
mm-hmm.
that anyone can build for.
So is the Arc their new flagship handset, would you say?
The Arc is one of two flagship handsets
mm-hmm.
for them. The other one's the Xperia Play. But the Arc is really the traditional Android touchscreen phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's got, you know, the first thing you notice about this handset, it's got a very large display. It's 4.2 inches large, but it also is extremely thin at only less than a centimeter. It's 8.7 millimeters thin.
Very, very slender. Now, they say that they've got the Sony Bravia engine. Now, when I think of Bravia, I think of the technology they have in their high def displays. Is it carrying over some of that technology from their consumer display area?
Definitely. That's what they wanted to do with all of their smartphones, to start working with the other Sony parts of the organization. And you know, the first one that came into this handset, as you mentioned, was the mobile Bravia engine. And what it provides is enhanced contrast for the display. Richer colors, and then less image noise. So you have a very sharp picture on your handset.
And imaging is a big part of the Arc, because the camera is it's staggering. It's an 8.1 megapixel camera on a handheld device.
You know, it's funny. A lot of people use these smartphones, and they don't really, you know, you think a digital camera inside your phone. You know, like, oh, it's good for the odd shot here and there. But I've used this handset and taken pictures on it, and it is truly one of the first devices which I can safely say I could just take phone pictures with this camera instead of carrying another camera around with me.
Can I tell you a secret? When I go on holiday now, it's almost always my phone that's taking pictures.
Yeah.
And the quality, staggering,
yeah,
for most of them. And none of them boast this particular image sensor, the Exmor R sensor, 8.1 megapixels. So things that where traditionally camera phones fell down, especially things like low light conditions, it might just be a performer.
Yeah, Exmor R is a technology that they've once again taken from their other. If you buy Sony digital cameras, you'll see on all of their latest ones the Exmor R sensor, and they've taken that sensor and put it into this smartphone.
The Sony Ericsson Arc, an example of convergence in a very thin form factor. If you think you might be interested in playing with one, why don't you drop by one of the kiosks inside Costco at Wireless, etc.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
I have one other follow-up that I wanted to bring to the table today. Art, I think our very first or second show, we talked about social couponing, Groupon, GoLowDeal.com, those sorts of things. Well, there's some news in the couponing world. Groupon has filed for an IPO. They've valued their company, are you ready for this, at about $20 billion.
Oh.
They started out in June of 2009 is when Groupon first hit the scene, and they had five North American markets. Now they are in 175 North American markets and 42 other countries, and their subscribers have soared to 152,000 from 152,000 to 83.1 million.
Have you used a Groupon?
Yeah, but the bloom's off the rose for me. I used it. I was really interested like every morning for like 2 weeks, and now not so much. How about you?
I still haven't used it. I don't know. Now there's so many of them out there,
yeah,
and I get email after email, and it just becomes like white noise to me.
It's an internet phenom. And now I still keep my eye on the deals, but what I'm looking for now is I'm looking for deals. I've signed up for the Seattle one because there's a certain hotel I like to stay at in Seattle that's really expensive, and every once in a while they come out with a deal, and I want to grab it when it comes, so I subscribe for that. It's become kind of boutique-y as far as I'm concerned, whereas it seemed kind of exclusive, so kind of cool at the beginning. Now it's pretty much just there. But having said that, guess who's stepping into that game now too? I'm going to give you three guesses, and let's see what your first guess is.
Well, I'll go with the obvious. Is Bill Gates getting into it?
No,
he's
yesterday's obvious. Who's today's obvious?
Google.
Google offers. They've launched in Portland, Oregon. And it's the start of Google going after Groupon, because Google will go after every – don't you got to be careful. Google's going to come after you. Now, the interesting thing, though, is the Google offers are going to integrate with something called Google Wallet. You don't know about Google Wallet yet, do you?
No, I do not.
Nobody – very few people do know about it. You'll have to search for it online if you want to find out about it. But it is Google's online payment system that's going to tie into your credit card. Now, if Google has their way, here's what's going to happen is you're going to walk into your grocery store. And you know how you have the swipe for your Interact and you have the chip reader for your Interact? There's going to be a little button with a phone on that terminal. And you're going to hit the button with the phone and it will talk to your phone right there and you do the transaction wirelessly, I imagine via Bluetooth, directly to your phone. That's the Google Wallet. So you can store all sorts of stuff within that wallet on your phone, and they want their coupons to tie in to that wallet. Are you starting to get scared?
Yeah. Well, why don't we just put chips in ourselves and... And then just swipe it. Or that where's the retinal scan?
Yeah, it's probably not. Google will want your eyes. Google will want your eyes. But so that's something to watch. Google offers is now, as I say, just in Portland, Oregon, as if they're not into enough things. But it will soon be rolled out. And I imagine once they start rolling it out, it will be a tidal wave of new couponing options. Again, tying you in more tightly to the Google universe. Is it any wonder that most of the people in the industry now look at Google just with the with awe, fear and awe, I believe is the term. They just keep charging along.
Jump on that train.
And finally, another IPO and another company worth $20 billion, which seems to be the going number. This one is Farmville.
Oh.
The guys that own Farmville, they're filing an IPO. $20 billion. How does Farmville, which is their main product, end up being worth $20 million? Do you play Farmville?
No.
Now,
I think the thing is that there's a lot of lonely people who love Facebook, and their friends don't post pictures enough or fast enough, and that's what they do with Farmville.
But,
and then they're dedicated their lives to
for
that.
Anybody that doesn't know, is Farmville is an app that runs on Facebook. And it is a virtual farm. You plant virtual fields with virtual money and you grow virtual asparagus and then you sell this virtual asparagus at market. But people spend real money for shortcuts. They're not making their money off of
ads.
They're making money off people saying, I want better fertilizer. I want instant crops. I don't know what people buy because I block the app in my Facebook. But 10% of Facebook users are playing Farmville.
Yeah, well, it's not a huge amount, but those
that is a huge amount. Well, that's a spectacularly huge amount.
But those 10% of people do it every day because Farmville makes you come back to it every day.
Yeah, and they're making billions of dollars, pennies at a time. That is all the time we have for this week's show. Reminder, drop in our website at dottotech.com. Tell us what you want to hear on the show, what you like, what you don't like. Let us know. Thanks to Art Factora, my producer. I'm Steve Dotto. We'll see you next week right here on Dotto Tech.